And welcome back. It was 20 years ago in December that the accords were signed in Dayton, Ohio, bringing to an end the bloody Bosnian War and the Srebrenica genocide that was part of it. The war, with its heavy ethnic and religious overtones, had thundered on for 3 years, producing tens of thousands of refugees, thousands of whom settled here in St. Louis. The anniversary of the war's end is being commemorated with a series of events this weekend as part of Fontbonne University's Bosnia Memory Project. The project is compiling a history of Bosnian genocide survivors who now live here. Joining me to talk about the anniversary and the ongoing impact of the war are Ben Moore, professor of English at Fontbonne University and director of the Bosnia Memory Project. Nadim Ramic is an attorney and will be leading a weekend discussion on the Dayton agreements. Ron Clutho is coordinator of the Refugee and Immigrant Program at Places for People. Gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you, Don.
Thanks for having us.
Ben, if I can ask you, and I hope this isn't unfair, could you very briefly kind of capsulize what that Bosnian War was all about?
The Bosnian War, in many ways, was really about leaders' abilities to use propaganda to divide a population that peacefully had been living together for centuries. It was an imposition on a multi-ethnic population of ideas of nationalism, and those ideas of nationalism were the basis for committing genocide. And this was something that was led by extremist non-Serbs, not all Serbs in Bosnia. It was supported by Milosevic's government in Serbia, which was highly nationalistic. It resulted in a division of Bosnia that persists to this day, partly because the Dayton Agreement left in place Republika Srpska, which was an area that was carved out of Bosnia.
And the area has been further divided since that time, has it not? There are three separate countries have been carved out of that that region.
Well, Yugoslavia was divided into multiple countries, including Slovenia and Serbia and Bosnia, Herzegovina and Croatia and Macedonia, and then eventually Montenegro. Bosnia still remains divided with the breakaway Republika Srpska intact as a political entity. That was one of the provisions of the Dayton Accord that we're going to give attention to on November 21st at Fontbonne. And this is seen by many people as having rewarded genocide because that part of Bosnia, the so-called Republika Srpska, was the area where the majority of the ethnic cleansing took place.
Yeah. We have not, Nadine, would have not had a chance to talk prior to your sitting down here just a couple of moments ago. When did you come to St. Louis?
I came here in June of 1999.
So you stayed for a good 4 or 5 years after the war ended.
Actually, we left the country in December of 92 and fled to Germany, or were forced to flee to Germany because we are kind of at the heart of this Republika Srpska area on the border with Serbia, and those were the first areas that actually, you know, took the hit.
Why did you come to St. Louis? Why St. Louis? There could have been other places, I'm sure, that you could have gone to.
That's a great question because when the decision was made, I was, you know, 16, 17 years old, so my parents made that decision. You know, the options were San Jose, California, because we had family out there, Jacksonville, Florida, because we had family out there, and St. Louis, Missouri, because we also had family here. And the decision for St. Louis was made because of cost of living at that time was and still is pretty low as compared to those other two areas. And we had family, and we heard that there were quite a few other Bosnian families in St. Louis, so they could help us.
Ron, is that a typical story?
I think so. I think a lot of the people that came here really didn't have a choice in the early days. They were just they came where the resettlement agencies took them. But I think probably up to a third of the Bosnians we have in St. Louis now relocated themselves from other cities they were resettled in because it was a lower cost of living here and because there was a growing business community here where they could buy things from back home and they would feel more at home.
More at home because there are so many of them. Mm-hmm. You want to be with your own people,
right,
and your own language. What sort of a contribution would you say that the people from Bosnia have made to St. Louis?
Well, I think they revitalized the Bevo area in particular. If you drive down Grevoj, you see multiple Bosnian-themed businesses where there were vacant buildings 25 years ago. I think they've taught me personally a lot about the importance of family and faith and time, friendship. And you've probably been to some Bosnian restaurants.
Oh, yes. Čevapčići, one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Čevaps. Yeah.
And I think they're hard workers. I used to help Bosnians get connected to jobs, and many times when an employer would hire one, they would beg for more because they were hard workers. They'd come in early, stay late, work overtime, and do a good job.
Nadeem, what about the issue of assimilating? Once you come to a new community like this, how difficult was it for you?
For me personally, not so difficult because of my young age. I assume the elderly had some more issues, you know, because of the language barriers. However, I think that the St. Louis community in general and certainly the large numbers of Bosnians here have kind of helped that transitional period to be easier for us. So, and I think most Bosnian Americans here in St. Louis have assimilated pretty well, and they've blended into the American society and have, you know, contributed greatly, not just economically, but culturally as well to the St. Louis region.
Ben, how do you look at all of this?
There's so many benefits that have been brought to us by the Bosnian population here. And one thing I'm interested in is the way in which their individual memories can really help us establish a historical narrative that's rooted in the lived experiences of people, which is one of the reasons we're conducting these oral histories. And one of the things we find in these oral histories is a lot of evidence that's really counter to many assumptions about the war and the genocide in Bosnia. For example, it was often reported here that the war and the genocide in Bosnia were the result of these ancient ethnic hatreds. But the oral histories, which recount neighbors and peaceful coexistence among people of different ethnicities, demonstrate that that's really a misunderstanding. The other thing that we find in our Bosnian neighbors are these remarkable stories of being able to adapt and survive and indeed flourish and continue to be lovers of their families and good neighbors to us, despite the kinds of horrific things that people have experienced.
Do you think that what's going on in the Middle East today is in any way analogous to the Bosnian situation or vice versa?
I'm not an expert on what's going on in the Middle East, and consequently, I would be hesitant to push the analogies too far without having that expertise. Certainly, what happened in Bosnia, in terms of the specifics, was very different from what's happening in Syria. But I do think that the Bosnian genocide is very helpful in giving us perspective on some of the recent events and. For example, the massacres in Paris and in the day before in Beirut, because what we see in common with these different massacres is the fact that civilians who were peaceful were targeted by extremists who were very fundamentalists, whether we're talking about ISIS or whether we're talking about the perpetrators of the ethnic cleansing in Bosnia. And so it's a very useful reminder that we ought not to divide the world according to who is Muslim or not or who is Western or not, but instead the real division that matters here is the division between those people who are extremist and promoting violence and hatred and those people who are pursuing justice.
Nadeem, you have thoughts about that? Do you see any analogy between what happened in your country and is happening now?
Well, when it comes to analogies, again, I'm not an expert in the Middle East, and what I can say about the refugee crisis right now that it has produced is, being a refugee myself, coming to this country as a refugee and seeing how the community, the Bosnian American community in general has flourished and, you know, helped the St. Louis region, I think, and in many ways, it'd be a moral crime to go against, you know, admitting refugees from Syria into the United States. I think this is a moment in history that, you know, makes you as an individual, it makes you as a nation and allows you to follow those moral guidelines as humans that we've got to help other humans, you know, and that's above religion, that's above everything else, ethnic background. I think most Americans agree that we have got to help those refugees. What we are allowing right now to creep into our thoughts is that fear And, you know, if we let that happen, we let ISIS win, because that's exactly what they want to happen to us. And that's why I think right now is the time for the United States and individuals and governors that are against it right now to stand up and say we're not going to be scared. We're going to do what's right. That's why we are the greatest country in the world.
How much trouble did you have getting in? A lot of red tape? Did it take a long time?
We just discussed it in the back room, how Bosnian Americans really had it easy coming in here. But there was a long waiting process of about 2 years of getting screened while we lived in Germany. They check out your background. They check out your connections. They check out everything about you. So once you're let into this country, you've been pretty well screened. So the danger that they're talking about, you know, refugees coming in as, you know, terrorists hiding among the refugees, I think it's a far stretch.
Right. Ron, let me get your take on that as someone who deals with the refugee and immigration situation. What's your take on the dialogue that's taking place now with regard to bringing Syrians in?
Well, I know that I'm getting calls a lot from Bosnians here who want to help. They want to know how they can help Syrians who are coming in. I believe St. Louis has gotten 29 so far, and the International Institute, which is a resettlement agency, has said that they're going to accept about 500 over the next couple of years. And I know that there's a fear of you know, bad actors slipping in with all the innocent refugees. I can understand that, and I know that people are in the Bosnian War, for example, there were a lot of screenings. I think people are afraid now because it would be more difficult to screen people that, you know, that are fleeing into Europe now. However, my understanding is that the Syrians that will be coming here in the next couple of years would be not the ones that are fleeing into Europe now, but the ones that have already been, that are in process, that have been living in refugee camps in Turkey and Jordan. So I think St. Louis has proven to be a welcoming community for the Bosnians and other, Bosnians are not the only refugee group in St. Louis. I think most communities have found a welcome here. So I'm expecting to welcome some Syrians in the next couple of years, too.
Well, you mentioned the International Institute, and I know that Anna Croslin, who runs that institute, has been outspoken in what she feels about allowing people to come in.
Yeah. Tuesday of this week, she had an open meeting, open to the public, kind of laying out what the plans were. The information I just shared with you was what she shared then.
Sure.
And there was quite a large crowd of people there, so there's interest in St. Louis to see what's happening.
Ben, do you want to weigh in on that part of it?
Well, I am concerned that the horrific things that have been done through ISIS might cause many people to hastily judge refugees and hastily judge especially refugees who are Muslim. And I think that the example that has been set by the Bosnian community here can go a long way towards allaying those hasty judgments. Most, though certainly not all, of the Bosnian community here is Muslim in some way. Certainly the range of observance is very great within the Bosnian community here. And it's just a reminder that many of the stereotypes that quickly arise in the media and often in people's less thoughtful moments just really don't apply, that the Muslim world is very variegated, very in many cases integrated with the rest of the world, and certainly that's the case here in St. Louis.
Well, we all have our thoughts about what's going on and what should be going on, but let's return now to what's going to be going on this weekend with regard to your project at Fonpon. What exactly is all this about? I understand it's going to be done in two languages over the 2 days, which is a little bit different.
It is. Saturday's events will be taking place in English, and Sunday's events will be in Bosnian. And we've got a range of events. A full schedule can be found on Fonpon's webpage.
And we'll have links to that, by the way.
Okay, terrific. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And on Saturday, beginning at 1, we'll have an opening reception for an exhibit, which my friend Ron here has put together about Srebrenica. And really key in that will be artifacts that belong to people here in St. Louis that in some way help to document what took place in Srebrenica with the massacre in 1995 and the aftermath of that. And then at 2:30, beginning at 2:30, we'll have some presentations And the first will be about Srebrenica, and then beginning at 3, we'll have a panel discussion about the ongoing effects of the Dayton Accord, which was first initialed in Dayton on November 21st of 1995. So we're recognizing the 20th anniversary of that. So though I can't fully say we're celebrating it.
No, and signed a couple of weeks after
And signed a couple of weeks after, yeah.
Nadeem, this is your area, the Dayton Accord. What do you have to say about that?
Well, the good thing about the Dayton Accord is, and that's probably the only good thing, is it ended the war. That's what people like to think.
That's
it ended the killing.
That's
exactly.
That's a pretty good thing.
Yeah. However, what it has done, it has frozen in time the ethnic politics that actually fueled the same war. So right now, 20 years later, you still have got that ethnic hatred, the ethnic politics that were in place at the time of the war. And it has, frozen in time Republika Srpska that has been established on genocide. And basically, it has recognized a state that's been recognized that's been established based on genocide in Srebrenica and other parts of the Bosnia and Herzegovina. The other thing that it has done is, according to the same, you can only be elected into political office if you belong to, only three groups: Bošnjaks, with Bosnian Muslims, Croats, or Serbs. So if you are affiliated, or if you see yourself as belonging to a Jewish minority or Roma minority, you cannot hold political office. I mean, how inhumanitarian is that? And it's by law in Bosnia.
I understand your concerns and what you've just said, but what can you do about it? I mean, it's been in effect now for 20 years. Can it be amended? Can it be changed? And would it carry any weight in that part of the world?
And that's exactly the discussion that's actually going on surrounding the Bosnian situation, the political situation. Most parties agree that the Dayton Agreement is outdated, that it cannot, that the Bosnian political sphere, that Bosnia itself cannot function properly just based on the Dayton Agreement. So it needs to be amended, needs to be changed. The big question is then how?
And by whom?
And by whom, exactly. Yeah. Because right now, still foreign players have got the right to interfere in Bosnian politics. I mean, they can come in and say, no, we don't like that, and this is the way we want it to be. And that's by law. That's by the Dayton Agreement. They can do that. And so I don't think any other country in the world functions like that.
Ron, is this a discussion that you hear much of?
To tell you the truth, most of the people that I work with from Bosnia, they just want to live their life here. They're concerned about their families back home that are struggling under this framework. We're going to discuss that at the event on Sunday or Saturday, the injustice they're seeing. But I work with a lot of people from Srebrenica who have survived that genocide and this event, the exhibition that Ben mentioned. I want to think that honors them for what they've been through. We've got a number of artifacts that were brought with people as they fled Srebrenica, other things that were found in mass graves of loved ones that of relatives here. And one thing that I think is going to be effective for anybody that comes. When you say 8,000 to 10,000 people died in a massacre like that, at least for me, that boggles the mind. I can't even fathom that. So we've gotten stories from Bosnian survivors in St. Louis about their relatives who were killed in the massacre, or who some of them were still missing. And we've gotten a little short biography for each guest to read an individual story to make, hopefully that'll bring it home a little bit more.
Right. We only have about a minute left. And Ben, is this an event or a series of events just for Bosnians? I mean, obviously, some people will be at a disadvantage who don't speak the language.
Certainly Saturdays will be, I think, of great interest to anybody from St. Louis or anybody who has an interest in Bosnia, because it will be in English. And these are our neighbors. These are events which have touched us here in St. Louis, regardless of whether we're Bosnian, because Bosnians have come to live among us.
Is this all happening out on campus, or where are the events?
It's in the Jack C. Taylor Library, which is right in the center of the campus at 6800 Wydown Avenue.
All right. Well, there are a series of events, and a lot is going on. Rest assured, we're going to have a full listing of all of them on our website at stlpublicradio.org, and folks can pick and choose those events that they would like to attend. Sounds like it's going to be quite a dramatic and emotional weekend. I'm sure you're looking
at it that way,
are you not? I want to thank you all so much for being with us. Ben Moore is director of FONTBAN's Bosnia Memory Project. Thank you, Ben, for being with us. Nadim Ramic is a local attorney. Nadim, thank you for being with us. I'm sure folks are looking forward to your remarks on the Dayton Accord. Thank you. And Ron Cluther, coordinator of the Refugee and Immigrant Program at Places for People. Thank you, too, for being with us. Good luck, all of you, at the event.
Thank you.
That's it for us for today. We'll join Steve Potter tomorrow for Cityscape, when he'll talk to musician Pokey LaFarge about his latest CD. We'll also hear about how Webster University students are helping the St. Louis Symphony reimagine Prokofiev's Peter and the Wolf, and about an exhibit of the calligraphic art of Salma Aratsu at St. Louis University's Museum of Contemporary Religious Art. Monday on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk about legal issues with our legal roundtable panel of experts. Archive versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. This program is produced by Mary Edwards, Alex Hoyer, and Kelly Moffitt, with the production assistance from Aaron Dorr and Spencer Reed. Executive producers Robert Peterson. St. Louis on the Air, a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks for listening. I'm Don Marsh.